We want to welcome Jeff Stick Davis, Roger Bartlett, Honeybee.
And who's on the cajones?
Troy Clemens.
All right.
What?
Welcome.
I didn't hear the name.
Troy. Troy Clemens.
Troy.
On percussion.
Yeah, you got to get right up on that mic. Right. Yeah.
Will do.
Now, these guys and girl are going to play a little bit of music for us and talk a little bit about Jimmy Buffett. They have a strong relationship to him. Stick, as I mentioned earlier in the show, was a founder, original member of the Amazing Rhythm Aces, and they opened many shows for Jimmy Buffett in his early career. Roger Bartlett, we're going to let him tell how he became Jimmy Buffett's first real guitar player. As he started his run into being famous. And Roger, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
You're living now in the Tampa Bay area, right?
I am, yeah. Moved down here from New York City about 5 years ago, and I love it down here. It's great.
Well, how did you become the guitar player for Jimmy?
Well, you know, we were in prison together.
Nothing else to talk about, yeah.
I met him. I was opening for him at a club in Nashville called the Exit Inn, in a group called the Outlaw Brothers, me and Michael Lind and George Worthington. And then about a year and a half later, I was opening for him again at a club in Austin, Texas called Castle Creek. And back in those days, you did like a run. You did like maybe four nights, like, you know, Wednesday through Saturday or Thursday through Sunday or something. And the last night, we were back in the green room, and I said, you know what? You need a guitar player. Me.
And, there you go.
And he said, all right, well, come on up for the next set. Sit in, and we'll see how it works out. And I didn't really know his songs, And so I kind of got up there and watched his hands and, you know, whatever chord he played, I played the same chord, you know, and tried to sing along, you know. I didn't really know the words, so it was like, oh, come Monday. he said, all right, you know, that was good. And so the next thing I knew, we were in Los Angeles at the Troubadour opening for Hoyt Axton. So, you know, that was kind of unnerving. And then after that, we went and we did a little tour with Three Dog Night. We played the Boston Music Hall, and we played big stadiums. Well, they're more like where they had the livestock fair in the fall, you
rodeos
know, right in Bangor, Maine, and in a place like that in Rochester, New York. And so then after that, you know, things get foggy.
Roger, you probably know the connection between Hoyt Axton and Three Dog Night.
Jeremiah was a bull.
He wrote their biggest hit song.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah,
that's right.
We're all still pretty angry about that. And
speaking to Mike, Stick.
Sorry, we're still angry about that. The ones that had to play it, you know, over the years.
He also wrote Dadgum, the Pusher Man, that Steppenwolf did.
Wow.
And the No No song that Ringo Starr had a hit with.
Oh, yeah.
No,
and he wrote I Don't Give a Darn About a Greenback a Dollar.
That's right. He was good. And his mom was...
She wrote Heartbreak Hotel.
Yeah.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Down at the end of Lonely Street.
In his DNA, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there was a Heartbreak Hotel in Florida. Florida. Yeehaw Junction.
Oh.
Right at the end of Lonely Street, there was a Heartbreak Hotel.
Not surprised.
I mean, I guess that's where you'd expect to find the Heartbreak Hotel, at the end of Lonely Street.
Makes sense.
And definitely in Florida.
It's a cul-de-sac in Lonely Street.
It's pretty pricey real estate now, as I understand.
Well, I was reminiscing recently. I thought Bob Ross was going to be here, the former music critic for the St. Pete Times and the Tampa Tribune and many other publications, because he covered that. He was did a review of the show at the Highlight Fronton on the October 9th in Tampa, And the Amazing Rhythm Aces opened the show.
The guy that reviewed the show is still alive. That alone, man, I'd like to just see him just for that.
Yeah, and then the next night there was a more or less a secret concert. It was not publicized at all. You had to go to Joe Nuzzo's surf shop to buy a ticket. Tickets were pretty high for those days, $75 for an individual, $125 for a couple. And it was on the Tom Sawyer Riverboat that used to be docked down there by the pier for many, many years in St. Pete. The date was October 9th, 1976. That was the day of the High Life Fronton, and the 10th was the day of the Tom Sawyer Riverboat cruise. And they had a bunch of food on there and a bunch of drink and word of mouth type thing. And about 300 people got on there. I got on there just because I thought maybe I would cover it for the St. Pete Times, but they didn't want me to. But Johnny Green gave me a ticket anyway, so I hung out on there. And what a scene. Big storm came up in the middle of the night. The boat was rocking back and forth. People were stumbling all over the place. And then little boats. Any boat was a little boat compared to the Tom Sawyer, but they would come up and bump up to the side of the Tom Sawyer and lift people up over the rail and get on the boat. So we left with 300, came back with about 400 or 500 on that boat. And you could hear the music. It was like a floating concert. There was a whole flotilla of boats all around that big boat as it drifted around Tampa Bay all over the place, you know.
I was on that boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People have told me.
Well, I mean, what a crazy thing, huh?
It was really crazy. I mean, you know, like you say, there was plenty of drink, you know, and I guess there was food. that wasn't really what
there was.
There was
a big old stuffed pig.
Oh yeah,
stuffed with seafood, I think.
Huh.
And kinds of food, and it was a mess. In fact, when the boat came back. The next day, when they came in to clean it up, they found two women passed out under a table.
Wow!
And they couldn't get them awake, and so they called the paramedics and they took them into the hospital, and they were fine later in the day. They just had alcohol poisoning, I guess.
I wondered what happened to that girl.
Yeah.
Well, at least she got a ride home.
Yeah. Did you make it on that boat? Stick?
I believe I did, yeah. Actually, I think there were two boats. I think there was the deluxe boat with the heavy hitters, then there was the boat that had, like, some of the guys from the Amazing Rhythm Aces and maybe the lighting crew or something. I don't think we were on the same boat with the dignitaries or all that, but, actually, my story has to do with the day before the concert at the High Life Fronton. We'd been out opening shows for Jimmy Buffett for couple of years anyway. We were both on the same label, so every time we both released records about the same time, so ABC at those days could, I guess, say who was opening act, and they'd put us out there as the opening act, whatever. Anyway, before the High Life Fronton show, the day before, there was a party down the road from the Don Cesar Pink Hotel out there at the beach. So we were staying at the Don Cesar, both bands were. Mike Wheeler. Remember Mike Wheeler? Manager for Jimmy Buffett. I think he's no longer with us.
Yeah,
Cool guy, good road manager. He lived down the road from the hotel there, and he was having a party where he lived, a famous house at the time called the Butler House. I doubt if it's there anymore, but I think it was a triplex. Anyway, it was on the beach. It was beautiful, you know. And so anyway, we go there, and that's in the 70s, so, you know, temper the story a little, but we're hanging out, and I remember walking out on in the back, whatever. There was a deck, and it was right on the water. So I'm out there, and it's a full moon. I'm looking out there, and there's the moon's reflecting, and there's this one girl standing out there, and she's this tall, about 5'5" or 5'6", straight hair, you know, weighs 9 pounds, and thought, maybe she doesn't know that I'm just the bass player, you know. So I sort of amble on over, and, you know, with the most respectful greeting I can think of for the time, I ask her if she'd like a toot. Whatever that means, you know. It seemed to work. Anyway, Well, she's the mother of my children now. We got married, and we're married for a long time.
Wow, there
we're
you go.
Still very close. Wow. Yeah, you know, so that day or whatever had a big effect on my life. We met then. And actually what happened was I told her to come back the next day to the Don Cesar and go to the concert, you know, ride in the bus with me. She said, well, are you sure you can even get me in this concert? And I said, yeah, just go there, you know, big old bus, just be there. So we go over for the sound check, but then we didn't come back. So there we are. We're over in Tampa. She's going over to the hotel expecting to see a tour bus. Well, luckily, my mom was at the hotel. She had come to the gig down from Georgia. So I said, look, you got to trust me on this. Go up to room, such, knock on the door. There's a lady. That's my mom. I promise. She'll show you some ID. So that happened. She went up there, rode over to the concert with my mom. Hey, you got to trust me for that, you know. And then, the rest was history, you know, so to speak. But so that's that was a significant day. But many good times playing with Jimmy Buffett. He was a good guy to a lot of times the opening act can be difficult, you know. Put it mildly, especially if they're an English band. but, yeah, he was very... very thoughtful. I remember we came out and did songs together at the end of the show, you know, sing along, whatever. And so, yeah, it was an honor to be out there touring with him. And then later on, many years later, he was managed by the same guy that managed the Eagles, Mr. Azoff. And so we were lucky enough to get to open some shows there with both Jimmy Buffett and the Eagles. And, of course, we weren't signed to Mr. Azoff, but that's another story. Anyway, so we got to see him and be on shows with him over about a 7 or 8 year period. And he's always the same guy, you know. I mean, I didn't know him that well, but always had a smile, man. Didn't seem to sweat the small stuff. Yeah. Do you? Didn't he kind of have that don't sweat the small stuff kind of attitude? You know?
Yes, he did.
Anyway. Well, how about a song?
A song? You want us to play a song?
By the way,
I had a gig yesterday, so I might yodel here.
Okay. I did read that he sang a lovely cruise on that boat that night. Oh, that was the first time anyone had ever heard it. He hadn't even recorded it yet.
Well, you know how he got that song. You know, it was written by a guy named Jonathan Baum. And Jonathan waited for him outside of his room at the Hall of Fame Hotel in Nashville. And when Jimmy came back to his room, Jonathan was there with his guitar, and he played him that song. And he said, I hate that. Get out of here. No.
It's the worst song I've ever heard.
You know, but I don't think he you know, ever did that again. But that, you know, if you're a songwriter, you got to take whatever opportunity you get.
Coming to you live from the Craftsman House Gallery, Cafe, and Pottery Studio here in Central Avenue and 30th Street.
Man, you said the full name, Gallery, Cafe, Pottery Studio. Man, really.
Right. Now we've got Linda Harrell and her husband watching us, Bill Paris, Hal Tony, Joanne Barmore. Joanne, give your son a call and have him send an email to Tim with the Kerouac information, please. Alexis, Bonnie Fouts, Emmett Carlisle, wishing us peace, Terry Pavinsky and Winston, and let's see, many more on Facebook, including Dale Stanton, Jay Kolb, Harvey Myers, and Mark Schofield.
Good morning, everybody.
Yeah. You're listening to the, what's the name of this band?
Do you guys have a name?
Do we have a name? What do you mean, as a band?
The Roger Bartlett Experience?
The Quantum Mechanics.
Okay. There you go.
Pass me a wrench, huh? A philosophical wrench.
Troy, what's that instrument you're playing there?
Cajon.
Cajon. Yep. All right. Okay.
Otherwise known as the box.
Something you can play and sit on at the same time.
It sounds pretty good, though.
That's great.
Miss Honey Bee allowed me to play her Martin OM-42.
Ooh.
You know, this is a beautiful.
I knew
guitar.
I bought that thing for a reason.
There you go.
Oh my God, this thing's like you know, having a girlfriend who likes you.
I wouldn't know.
Look, the FCC light's blinking, Tim. Why?
Oh, no. They're always out to get us.
I have a good Jimmy Buffett story for you.
All right.
When I first went to work for him, you know, we were playing all these... For me, you know, I was, like, out of the nightclubs in Austin and you know, wherever. And one day he said, you know, we're going to a birthday party. And I was like, okay. And so we flew into Michigan. I think it was Michigan. And we drove through the back country to this huge mansion that was owned by a guy named Dan Gerber of the Gerber baby food family. And, you know, it was an amazing house. And he had a writer's tower. There was this tower that went way up and maybe like, I don't know, 30 feet up into the trees. And you took a spiral staircase up there. And when you got up there, there was like a desk and a typewriter. This was before computers. And so they had the birthday party in the backyard. And, you know, we played some for the birthday party. It was kind of not really that formal a gig, you know. But they had a magician who flew in a hot air balloon. Now, I don't know how he did this. He flew in the hot air balloon, landed in the backyard, got out, did his magic show, jumped back into the balloon, floated away. I was like, whoa.
Well, all right.
You know, or that's how I remember it anyway.
There's no place like home.
Exactly.
That's right. You know, we didn't look at the man behind the curtain there. But we had all kinds of, you know, when you, like, one time we used to play kind of a circuit. We played, like, Paul's Mall or Passim's Coffee House in Cambridge in Boston. And then we'd play the Quiet Night in Chicago and the Troubadour in L.A. and the Boarding House in San Francisco and, you know, so on and so on. One day, you know, I found myself with him going down to the Playboy Mansion. And I was like, whoa, we're going to the play. Got there, you know, and we walked around and there were playmates running around. And, you know, we went back out and saw the famous pool they have out there with the grotto. And, you know, I was, like, full of myself, you know, so I went up to one of the secretaries. I was like, hey, you know, we got a gig tonight. You know, why don't you come down to the gig? She said, well, I can't make it. My boyfriend, it's his birthday. I said, well, ditch him. And, you know, didn't work, you know. It's just one of the many times it didn't work for me. But, you know. You know, we just went from amazing gig to amazing gig. One time we played a festival, and at the festival there was John Hartford and Doc Watson and wow. Charlie Daniels, and it was in Oklahoma, and we were still an acoustic duo then, and so we walked out on stage to a crowd of 135,000 people.
Wow.
Woo. This is how glad I drank. At that point, somebody said, did you drink before you went on stage? I said, do you think I'd go out there alone?
It wasn't the Woody Guthrie Festival, was it?
You know, I don't know. You know, a lot of that stuff gets a little foggy. And you know, at this point in my life, I remember things that didn't happen. I don't remember things that did happen, you know. So... But there were such amazing gigs. I mean, we did like a No Nukes gig at a stadium in Sacramento with the Eagles and Pablo Cruz and the Doobie Brothers. And you know, I found this was like 1976, something like that. And I found myself on stage standing right next to Jane Fonda, you know. And in 1976, let me tell you, Jane Fonda was very, very hot. And I was like, blah, blah, blah. So. One of the friends of the Vietnam vet, so. Well, you know what? At that moment, I wasn't thinking about that. You know, I understand your trepidation there, but, you know.
I get fired from Facebook.
Yeah. I'm just speaking... Purely the view from where I was standing was outstanding.
Well, Stick, did you have that much fun in the Aces?
Well, we missed the grotto phase. And wait for that Wayback Machine there and Mr. Peabody or something. Yeah, you know, in our own way, sure. We were just a bunch of guys from the Amazing Rhythm Aces. We were like a bar band as much as anything. And, you know, we had a little bit of success and, you know, got to travel all around the United States and later other countries and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I can't even recount all the stories from back in those days. That's about 50 years ago for me is when that started.
Well, you know, many of the people are dead now, so they could just make stuff up.
That's good. And you can't even libel the dead. You can say anything about them, you know. But absolutely, yeah, that was a different time. I don't know if it's still like that touring out there these days or not, you know. So, but it's pretty carefree, you know.
It was definitely carefree. I mean, you know, the 70s, the late 60s and the early 70s were like a whole different time, you know. Things that you could do then, you can't do now.
It was creative, though. It was creative times. Wow.
We played bars that were listening rooms. And in a listening room, they stopped serving alcohol while the band was on stage. And people actually listened to the band.
Huh. I've never heard of this concept. This is very strange.
I know it's you know, anathema now.
And at the Bluebird, if you were talking, they'd come up and say, "Shh."
Yeah.
Well, back in the day, you know, if you were talking, they'd come up and slap you once.
The warning slap.
Did you ever play a place with chicken wire between you and the audience?
I did. When I was a kid, I lived in Arkansas, in Little Rock, Arkansas, and I played a place right on a highway outside of town called the Hi-Hat. You know, and it had chicken wire around the stage. So, you know, I guess the name was supposed to impart some level of class, but once you stepped inside, you know. you know, we played a lot of, back then we played like roller rinks, you know. We played.
Fairs
were fairs, big. Yeah, you know, yeah, the corn dog circuit there.
That's where the girls were, went there all the time.
Yeah, yeah. We played proms and stuff like that, you know. I don't know if they still have bands at proms, you know. Now it's just like a DJ or something. Yeah,
bands are banned at proms, I guess. Yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
I see what you did there.
How about a song?
Okay. All right. So when I first went to work for Jimmy Buffett and found myself out at the Troubadour, you know, before our first gig, we were in doing a sound check, and after we did the sound check, we went up to the office upstairs, and we were talking to the woman who booked the place. And Jimmy said, "I've got a new song that I just finished that I'd like to play for you." And she was, "Oh, okay, well, I'd love to hear it," you know. And so he sat down, and he played this.
Arriving too late. smuggling. I've run my share of grass, though I made enough money to buy Miami. Well, I pissed it away so fast, never meant to last, never meant to last. Gotta go fishing. I'm down to rock bottom again. Just a few friends. Just a few friends. Takes a while, just takes a while. Mother, Mother Ocean, after all these years, I found my occupational hazard bin. My occupation's just not around. Feels like I've drowned. Gonna head uptown. Feels like I've drowned, but I won't wear a frown.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Did you know that was a hit? Did you know that was a hit the first time you saw it, heard it?
Heard it.
You know, I like the song. I mean, it's probably my favorite Jimmy Buffett song, but, you know, I don't know if you ever know something's a hit. You know, I know I like it, and I've heard songs that I thought were hits and weren't, you know. So, you know, you hang around Nashville and songwriters up there and, you know, just hang around songwriters in general, you know, you hear stuff.
I'm going to tell you. They got a hit.
I mean, I was hanging around with a friend of mine named Blaze Dillon in Nashville, and he had a couple of friends show up, and we sat around and jammed one night, and they had a recording session the next day. It was a guy named Minter Williams, and the singer he had was a guy named Dobie Gray. And they were doing a song called Give Me the Beat Boys and Free My Soul. I Want to Get Lost in Rock and Roll. And you know, when I heard that one, I was pretty sure that was a hit.
Well, good ear there, I suppose.
Roger, when you started that song out, that rhythm is different than you know, most people, the way most people do it. It's real slow and plodding. That was kind of, I thought you were starting off with the Wino and I Know.
Oh,
kinda,
yeah.
Okay. Kind of had that say. I thought, I'm going to play the Wino and I Know.
I do a little different version of Pirate because, you know, everybody does it the same way. And I thought, well, you know.
Interesting.
Let me. It's more of an. Right. Or it can be more of an up-tempo. Kind of, I mean, it's really actually kind of the same tempo. I'm just doing a different rhythm to it.
I believe it was after last week's folk show, The Morning from the Hawthorne Down the Street. They did an hour of old. You know, the early Jimmy Buffett stuff.
Yeah.
And that was Wino and I Know and Pencil Thin Mustache. They're just some great songs. So I don't know if you were around any of that. You were around, you know, in the early days. And usually the early days are the best days, I think, you know.
Well, you know.
In a lot of people's career.
Well, you know, he was very fresh then. You know, the thing about Jimmy is that, you know, he incorporated, you know, other writers in the band. You know, he and Tom Corcoran had a great collaboration, and then, you know, him and Mac McAnally and Peter Mayer and
Keith Sykes, another one.
Keith Sykes, yeah. He, you know, he's like to spread around the publishing, you know, to all these people, and you know, when you're famous, it takes up a lot of time, and doesn't leave you a lot of time for, you know, sitting by yourself and ruminating about a song. So, you know, at some point, you know, he you know, did a lot of cover things, and he was really back from when the song was king.
Yeah.
You know, when there was a great song, everyone did it. Now a song is pretty specific to the artist, you know, which is,
yeah,
I think a bad thing. You know, and I loved when I saw Bob Dylan and Joan Baez doing Pirate.
Really?
Oh, huh, yeah.
That's interesting.
There's a video.
Look,
get on YouTube.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, didn't Bob recently comment that Jimmy was not his favorite writer, at least one of his favorites?
Well, one of his five favorites, yeah.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Man. Hey, yeah. Bob even knows you exist. But, yeah.
I didn't know Jimmy Buffett ever recorded or performed with Sinatra, but he did.
Yeah. Well, you know, those were the
odds herring.
Nancy, you know, or the other one?
Two people I wouldn't have put together, but there's a great
Bill,
recording.
Bill Sinatra.
They had there's a great version of the title escapes me now, but a huge big band song that Sinatra did. And you can hear Jimmy Buffett just singing. You know, he sings a verse.
There you go.
Frank sings a verse.
All right, well, you're listening to the Florida Folk Show on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM, WMTB LP St. Petersburg, where local music lives. Support for the Florida Folk Show comes from the Will McLean Foundation. The foundation produces the annual Will McLean Music Festival, featuring all Florida artists. They also produce monthly concerts and award annual college scholarships. The Will McLean Foundation also operates the Florida Sand Music Ranch, formerly the Sertoma Youth Ranch.
All right, and we've got Pamela Jo Hadley, Michael Gaspar DiBernardo, Gloria Holloway. Gloria, you're still around. I did not know that. Allie Smith, Daniel Steyer, great musical talent, especially that beautiful singer.
Hey, Dan.
David John Stevenson. Hi, Troy and Melissa. So, yeah, Gloria, we haven't seen you in so long. It just seemed like you faded away. I'm glad to hear that you're up and watching us on Facebook. Hopefully we'll see you down at the at Bayboro to see Charlie Morris on Monday at 6 o'clock, 6 to 8 p.m.
Bayboro St. Pete Mountain
Brewing.
Boys.
Yeah.
Man. Well.
Did you guys see that documentary about the Beatles when they locked them in that room and made them write?
Yes.
What did you think about that? I mean, that was pretty interesting how they fed off each other.
It was very interesting, you know, how you know, Get Back sort of just came right there, you know, and the interchange. I mean, it kind of, you know, when you see Yoko sitting on the floor, it kind of like, oh, Spinal Tap. but it was, you know, but at a certain point for me, you know, it was like I've been in that situation with bands so many times that, you know, I had to hop around to you know, the high points. But they were... That was an amazing, you know, situation to be in, amazing circumstance. I mean, you know, you rise above what you are when you, you know, I was a better guitar player when I played for Jimmy Buffett, you know. When I left the band, you know, I lost my confidence and, you know, it was like, took me a while to get it back, you know. It's like, when you're on that level, you rise above what you really are, you know, so... And they were really something to begin with.
Yeah, Ringo come in looking tired. What's wrong, man? Man, I had a hard day's night. Boom. There's a song.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Well, y'all want to play one more song for us?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay, I mean, I figured it couldn't hurt to ask.
Yeah, well, we're going to let Stick do one. Do the shallowest song ever written.
That's right. This is dedicated to all you listeners out there.
About it.
They was old enough to scope it out and keep it loose. And she said, you don't look like my type, but I guess you'll do. The rainbow man, the red rendezvous. And he said, I'll even tell you I love you if you want me to. Very sincerely. The rainbow man, the red rendezvous, Roger Bartlett.
He was refreshing.
Then he went to the desk, made his request while she waited outside.
Anticipation.
He came back with the key. She said, give it to me.
I'll unlock the door.
She said, I've never done this kind of thing before. Have you?
Changed to protect the ignorant, I guess.
Thank you.
Culture lovers.
Oh, man. That was fun.
It was fun.
Colored shirt.
Great job, everybody.
Sounded fantastic out here on the porch of the Craftsman House Gallery.
It's we'll make a separate one out of that.
There you go.
Podcast, yeah. All right.
All right, well, what are you thinking, Pete?
Well, did Bob Ross show up yet?
I don't know.
I don't believe so. Well, Stick, I think you were being kind of modest there a while ago when you were talking about we were a bar band that had a little bit of success.
You beg to differ?
Got me where I am today.
You know, I lived in central Illinois, and I wasn't the only one that had Amazing Rhythm Aces records. Y'all were quite popular up there.
Thank you very much.
In the cornfields and soybean fields of the Midwest.
Hopefully, I mean, because we were all sort of everyman kind of guys in the band. We all came from, you know, middle class working kind of families, you know. Just everybody was drawing, probably it started February 9th, 1964, when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan and everybody was off to the races. You know?
Yep. It got us all.
Well, Daniel Steyer on Facebook said he used to cover The End Is Not in Sight.
If I can say, I always say this in passing, that's our Grammy-winning song. I say that for our deceased members of the band. I didn't write it. Russell Smith did, but
see,
that's right.
You were being modest. Yeah. A bar band with a Grammy.
Yeah, I saw it.
Oh, man. But you don't. I mean, that was a little disclaimer on the bottom.
Right.
That was the theme song for every rock and roll band. You know,
The end is not in sight. Yeah.
Where can people see you guys in your normal life of playing music around town?
Well, you could see me at the North End Tap House coming up here pretty soon. And the 23rd, I'll be at the Paradise Grill. And, you know, some people are flying me out to Colorado to do a video series with Willis Allen Ramsey. Do you know who Willis Allen Ramsey is?
Wishbone.
He wrote Spider John that Jimmy did. But even more famously, he wrote Muskrat Love that was a big hit for Captain and Tennille in America.
Yeah. There you go.
And, you know, you can't write songs like that anymore, Muskrat Love. You know, people wouldn't.
The Muskrat Lovers alone, man. You know, can you imagine?
You know, or you know, you're never gonna hear somebody covering "Rather See You Dead, Little Girl" than to be with another man.
Wow,
different time, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. They don't write them like that anymore.
No. What about you, Stick? Where can people see you?
I play every Thursday night at I call it the Dean Jam. It used to be the Dean Germain Jam that was at the Green Oasis, Green Iguana, for many years. Now it's at American Legion, Post 138 on Prescott Street, South Tampa, 7:30, 10:30 every Thursday. It's great. A lot of cool players come by. It's right at sunset. Great. Play at Christchurch in Palm Harbor every Sunday at 10 o'clock if anyone's inclined. Different places. Let me see. I play it this month. Playing at Pete's, South Tampa, with Jerry Toledo, every other Tuesday. I think this month. I'd have to look at my calendar. But yeah, I play different folks around. You know, about three times a week. I'm quite lucky. People call and have me play. Man, it's great to play with Roger. Such a great songwriter. And please support songwriters, man. Without those guys, guys like me wouldn't have nothing to play.
There you go.
I heard somebody say about the writer's strike the other day, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage.
That's right.
How about Honeybee?
I'm going to be at Brits tonight out on Treasure Island. And I'm also a member of the Seeger Experience Band, so Dan was writing in a couple of comments. We'll be doing some bigger shows coming up soon. And I play often with Roger, and we play also out at Paradise Grill. And just check out my Facebook page, Honeybee Music, M-U-Z-I-K.
What's the Seeger Experience?
We are a Bob Seeger tribute band, and it's a really good show. Dan's a great performer and great players. Dan over here to my right playing percussion. I'm sorry, Troy is our drummer for the band. So, yeah.
Did you know Bob Seeger used to hang out in Treasure Island?
I did not.
Yeah, I remember there was a period there where he like dropped out of music for a while, and that's where he was out there just hanging out. Never really told anybody who he was. People didn't really know what he looked like, you know. And,
right.
He was there for a while.
That's a good place to hide. And since we mentioned the
Sunset
Paradise
Beach, is that where he lived?
I'm starting up a new tribute band myself. It's a Yoko Ono tribute.
I think I got the bag in my car. There.
It's called Yoko Oh No.
That's really good.